What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Republicans want to start World War III. That's right. Come September 30th. We're looking towards another government shutdown because Republicans in the House are saying, you know what? We didn't get the pound of flesh we wanted. We didn't get the pain and the misery. We didn't get the recession that we were hoping for. So you've got, according to Axios, you've got a Republican lawmaker saying, hey, this spending fight's going to be World War III. We're going nuclear. And understand, they need it. They need this. They need a recession. The only chance they've got in 2024 is to cause mass pain and suffering and struggle and recession. It has to happen. That's when you do when you're running for office and you do your four boxes, you know, what you're going to say about yourself, what you're going to say about your opponent, what your opponent's going to say about you and all of that. When you fill that out, in all four of those boxes, Republicans need recession. That's basically what it is. Number one, we need a recession. We need the economy to tank because guess what? It's doing well. Jobs are up, wages going up, inflation going down. And that's why today when President Biden tweeted out, remember when the experts said that to get inflation under control, we needed to lower wages and drive up unemployment. He said, I never bought that. Instead, I focused on getting more Americans into the workforce, fixing our broken supply chains, and lowering costs. And it's working. Yeah, it is. It's working. And that's got Republicans losing their ever-loving, flipping minds. And they need chaos. They need a recession. They need fear. Which is why we're seeing all this other craziness. Why we're seeing all the rewrite of history in Florida. While we're seeing all of the, well, the culture war stuff. The stuff that's going to keep us pitted against each other and throwing bombs at each other from the sidewalks. Now, today, the big story, obviously, the president got together with seven of the big tech companies. Amazon, Google, Inflection, Meta, Microsoft, OpenAI, and Anthropic, I've never heard of them, but I guess they're a big one too. And they've come to some voluntary guidelines for AI. Now, the administration says that they've secured commitments on responsible innovation. And I got to be honest, as much as I love Joe, I don't know, responsible innovation out of the tech gurus, not so on board. But here's the thing. Congress isn't going to do its job. Congress is so far out of this that this is the best we're going to do. Biden coming together and saying, hey, there's got to be some minimal things. Now, understand, the tech companies, I don't trust any agreement that's voluntary. Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll do that. Bet on that. Checks in the mail. And I certainly don't trust tech companies when they say they'll voluntarily do something. But this is a success, I got to say. It's a first baby step. I mean, very, very small baby. A very small baby step. But as I said, you know, Congress has got to get their heads out of their, you know, and get ahead of this before the genie's completely out of the bottle and we're completely screwed when AI takes over. Because understand, there's going to be a tsunami of job loss. This technology, along with robotics and automation and all that, going to replace us in large numbers. And this is why you're seeing in union contracts them fighting against the use of AI, them fighting against the use of automation, because they know that once corporate America goes, hey, we can flip the switch and have a robot or a computer or artificial software come out and say, you know what, we can work 24/7, 365, don't need vacations, don't need days off, certainly don't take sick time. And there's a lot of problems with the AI revolution that we should be concerned with. The fact that, you know, it's who feeds the system decides what comes out. You know, this is the scary part of this for me is, because look, I'm looking at what they're doing in places like Florida, rewriting history. The people who have always rewritten history have always done it to benefit themselves at the expense of whoever else, whatever the loser was. Their history is never told. AI is going to be the same thing. The person who writes the code, the person who inputs all of the information that AI chooses from, that's power. So this idea that we could basically train this system to continue to have all the biases and all of the discrimination that made America great, that should be frightening. And the fact that there isn't any real transparency in this system, that we don't know how the machinery works. I mean, these wonderful algorithms that keep feeding me crap on my social media page. Understand, social media is just, that's like a little tidbit of what the future is going to be. So if you're not thrilled with what you get from your social media accounts, the kind of garbage that's sent to you constantly, imagine when they take over. And then start thinking about the privacy problems and the idea, the security problems. The idea of us having any personal privacy is long gone. Some argue I'm already behind in saying that it's gone. I like to hold on to the illusion that we still have some bit of privacy, some bit of ourselves left. But once this AI takes over, once this brave new world comes around, there's none of that. And you know, look, at the end of this, as we talked yesterday with Raphael, who's on strike with the Writers Guild, the idea that human creativity and the idea of any personal touch to something is over. And then, you know, look, all of the economic problems that come with it, massive inequality. You know, I've seen some of the people on social media going, you know, this is going to be the greatest year. I think his name's Gary Vee. I've seen Gary Vee going, yo, AI is going to create millionaires, lots of them. We're going to have millionaires created because of this. And you go, yeah, duh. Didn't need to be a genius to figure that one out, Gary. Because in every transition, there are winners, handful of winners, and all of the rest of the people losers, the working people who are going to take it on the chin. But this is even worse, because this just isn't a technological change that's going to, you know, make, you know, massive productive improvements. It's going to. And those productive improvements going to the handful that they're going to put it in their pocket and screw over working people. It's more than that. I mean, it's everything we do. It's our entire democratic process. I mean, we're in a moment right now where confirmation bias is all around us. We're in a moment right now where you can be in your camps, where you got your bubble and I only want Fox News, or I only want, you know, whatever is on the left. I don't know. Is there anything on the left? I guess the CNN was blamed for being left for a while. I guess MSNBC, they're kind of a corporate left, maybe. There's no Fox News for the left. There really isn't. And this is what we're going to get in the future. All you're going to get is the corporate side of things. All you're going to get is what the people who control the systems and the algorithms feed into it. So the fact that you're going to have billionaires made out of this, you're going to have, you know, wealthy people, really wealthy people made out of this. The vast majority of us, we're screwed. Because not only are we not going to benefit from the financial part of it, because the handful of people who run these big tech companies are going to get it, but also the way for us to fight back will be rigged. Because, well, where do we get our news and information? Social media. Who runs this? Big tech. So I look at the measures that President Biden negotiated, the administration negotiated, and I'm going, okay, these are, you know, kind of, yeah. This is what the tech industry said, you know, we're willing to give you as a voluntary commitment. But I really have no faith that they're going to hold to this for long. But these are some of the things that they wanted to do. And one of the big ones is using watermarks on audio and visual content so that we, the dim, we can say, oh, yeah, that's an AI product. So when Donald Trump, you know, they have a video of him mouthing and saying the words that he tweeted, you go, no, that's not him saying that. That's, he may have tweeted it, but that's not him actually saying it. Because there are already deep fakes out there where people are going, I didn't say that. And you go, no, you didn't. And that should scare you. So the watermarks, that's a good idea. They also want to allow independent experts to push these models into bad behavior and process something known as red teaming. So they're going to try and booger up the system so they can figure out how to fix it. Okay, that's one thing. Sharing trust and safety information with government agencies and other companies. Yeah, that's going to happen. And the right will lose their mind because, oh, the government's working with the tech companies. And I'm a little weirded out by that. Investing in cybersecurity measures, we certainly need to do that. Encouraging third parties to uncover security vulnerabilities. Yeah, they're going to be third, fourth, fifth, sixth, foreign countries, people who hate us. There's going to be a lot of that. And understand, once they get the ability to hack into our AI systems, it's amazing how fast the common sense of the country has changed. You know, as somebody who's a little bit older, you got people go, was it like this when you were younger? And the answer is no, it was never like this. You know, 30 years ago, the me of then coming to now would be, well, canceled immediately, but enraged at what we've become. So we're in this space. Also, reporting societal risks, such as inappropriate uses and biases. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Prioritizing research on AI's societal risks. Yeah, we should be doing that. And our government should be doing that as a matter of course. And using the most cutting AI system known as frontier modeling to solve society's greatest problems. You know what society's greatest problems are right now? The people behind AI. That's what frightens me. The people who have the control of what is going to be the most powerful tool in the history of humanity to change hearts and minds, to get people to groupthink. Because again, you know, the people who pull the strings, it's amazing how many people I talk to who don't realize that the social media accounts they have, that there's an algorithm that feeds them what the algorithm thinks they want to see. And they wonder why all they see is craziness like they believe. There's never anything to challenge that because it's all about keeping your eyes on social media. It's all about getting you to look at Instagram or Facebook or whatever. It's all about keeping you hooked. It's all about giving you that drug that you crave and the outrage that you need. They're masters at this. So the fact that Biden got a little bit of something, you know, good on Biden for doing this. But again, I don't trust any voluntary agreement, especially with tech companies. This is why Congress has got to regulate. I know regulation is a horrible idea in Republican circles, but you're going to have to come around to it because this, my friends, this could be the end of this wonderful thing we call representative democracy. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Also, give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Bob Casey, senator from my state of Pennsylvania, running for re-election, and hopefully he is re-elected easily because I think he's one of the really good guys in the Senate. He's got a new piece of legislation that he's going to be moving. It's called the No Robot Bosses Act. And you go, well, it's about damn time. Because we've been talking about places like Amazon who, you know, AI already is watching everything they do. People are being fired by computer, by text, because everything they do is monitored by a handheld unit. If you're not touching a box so every couple of seconds, it's barking at you, asking you, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why aren't you doing this? And you know, constant surveillance, constantly under the watchful eye of the computer. And now Casey has this No Robot Bosses Act, which, what he says right now, there's nothing stopping a corporation from using artificial intelligence to hire, manage, or even fire workers without involvement of a human being. He goes on to say, as robot bosses become more prevalent in the workplace, we have an obligation to protect working families from the dangers of employers misusing and abusing the novel technologies. And his legislation would ban employers from relying exclusively on automated decisions, these systems to make employment decisions. Now, my problem is with the wording, relying exclusively. How much is exclusively? All of it? 99% of it? Can we use 98% of what the computer says? Also, it requires periodic testing, such for systems of possible discrimination and bias before they're used in employment decisions. Also requires training for those using the systems, if there are any humans left. mandate human oversight of the automated decision systems before they are used in employment decisions, require disclosures of the use of the system, and create the Technology and Worker Protection Division within the Department of Labor. Now, again, I come back to the simple answer in Rick Smith's world, and you all know what that is. If you've listened to this show any longer than 5 minutes, you know what my solution to this is. My solution to this is, right now, every working person should join a labor union. Right now, everyone should get a collective bargaining agreement. Right now, everyone should band together with their coworkers, whether you start your own or use an existing union, but fight for a contract that has language in it. You know, these laws, while we're going to pass the, potentially, I don't see Republicans coming along. Maybe I'm wrong. But the No Robot Bosses Act, there's always going to be a loophole because, as it says in the first thing I read, employers aren't going to be able to use exclusively the information. Not, they can't use exclusively, but 99.94%, that's not exclusive. I mean, this is how bad it can get. So for me, the idea that you have representation in the workplace and ability to sit down and say, hey, this is how this is being used, or how you're not going to use it. At some point, we have to be the ones who say no. We have to be the ones who say, you know what, you know, we've got to band together and fight back. Literally, fighting the machine. Because if we do nothing in this moment, and understand, I'm not seeing the kind of outrage that I think we should be seeing. I'm not hearing the kind of concern that I think we should be seeing. I see the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors. I see them fighting for their future. The idea that, I mean, think about this for a second. When I found out that the studios were going, you know, we're going to pay extras to come in and we'll pay them one time, $100 a day or whatever it is. And then we're going to take their image and their likeness and we're going to use it forever. Forever. We'll never have to pay an extra again. All those people who were eking out an existence in Hollywood trying to be actors or writers or whatever, their livelihood is over once that happens. Because a lot of people have made ends meet by, well, today I'll go over and I'll play an extra here and I'll pick up a couple of bucks to put food on the table or keep a roof. That's done. And the studios are like, that's great. We can get rid of all these people. We've got their image. We can use it for whatever we want. It's great. AI is fabulous. We won't even need actors in the future. It's all going to be robotics. It's all going to be animation and automation. And that sounds great because, look, there are a lot of good things that AI can bring us. Look, medically, it should, honestly, it should be able to do away with the high cost of healthcare. You know, I get this, you know, me personally, I get an upper respiratory infection almost every year. It's like clockwork, except for the last couple, knock on something. But it's one of those things where, you know, back in the old days when I had a personal doctor, you know, and I had a good relationship with the doctor, who he has since retired and sold his practice to a behemoth corporation you're just a number. But I used to call him up and say, hey, I got my respiratory infection again. He goes, okay, I'll just write you a script. Just go pick it up. I know your problem. You don't have to come in. You don't have to. And he wouldn't charge me. Wouldn't charge my insurance. It was just, hey, I know what it is. You know, I could call up to one of the AI doctors and go, you know, here's my symptoms. This is my record. This is, you know, and then we go, yeah, you got an upper respiratory infection. Bang, here's a prescription. There are things that we can do. You could go in, hey, you know, I got a cold or whatever. That low level, you know, an instant kind of healthcare stuff that could be all done by AI and could be helpful for doctors in not being bogged down by the little stuff that we're now having PAs or other people do. That could be something helpful. Now, what are you going to do with all those people who are potentially down the road going to lose their jobs? I'm not so worried about that right now because we don't have enough of them. This is where AI can be helpful. This is where it can fill a gap. But here's the problem. You know, once we start down this road, once that ball starts rolling, you don't stop it. And this is where, again, Congress has got their heads so far up the entertainment wagons behind that I don't know enough people are doing this. Now, for those people who say, well, you know, Democrats are no different than Republicans. No, Democrats are actually trying to get some of this stuff done. In fact, you know, there's also, I think it was Cory Booker and Bob Casey who came forth with the Exploitative Workplace Surveillance and Technologies Task Force Act. That would create a task force to look into surveillance in the workplace. Because should you be monitored every second you're at work? Should everything you do be, and do you have the right to say no? Not today, you don't. I want to hear your thoughts. Is this something that's concerning to you? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Botox Cosmetic, out of botulinum toxin A, FDA approved for over 20 years. So, talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you.
For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, visit BotoxCosmetic.com or call 877-351-0300.
Remember to ask for Botox Cosmetic by name. To see for yourself and learn more, visit BotoxCosmetic.com. That's BotoxCosmetic.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, do you remember, and this hasn't been long ago, remember when Republicans said that, you know, when Roe was overturned, that they weren't going to put any women in jail? That wasn't going to happen. We would never do that. We're just about protecting the baby. We would never go after contraception. We would never. It's kind of like when they do that. They did that thing on back on the inauguration day when Biden accused them of going after Social Security, and they had a complete meltdown. Who, us? We would never do that. And the reason I point this out is, right now, a teenager in Nebraska who used the abortion pill to terminate her pregnancy, she was sentenced yesterday to 90 days in jail after she pled guilty earlier this year to illegally concealing the remains. And this is one of those things where you go, if we're in a world where it's safe and legal, there's nothing here. Now, what's interesting to me is the girl, she's going to jail for 90 days. The kid, the boy that got her pregnant, because I'm sure this was not an immaculate conception, he got nothing. And that's what I find interesting about all of this. We're punishing, again, we're going to punish women, but we're never going to go after the men. No. And look, I'm living proof of that. I don't even know my father's name, and nor do I want to. But you know, my mother at 16 was here he is. And there I was. And we struggled mightily for years until she passed, because there wasn't a breadwinner. And the sperm donor father of mine off doing who knows what, wherever, and you know, living the high life, not responsible. And this is one of those moments where I go, you know, if we're going to come down on women and say, you have to have this child, you have to, don't we have to come down on the men as well? And understand, this is what this is. And I was having this conversation with my producer today, and he said, you know, the reality is, you know, people should just stop having sex. And I go, yeah, that's what conservatives want. This is the step to getting us to Christian Sharia law. This is the step to getting us to the morality police beating people up for living life and being a teenage girl who makes a mistake. This is the punishment. and then to be able to use her in society as the shame. That's what this is about. It's about much more than just, you did a bad thing. You had sex. No, this is about punishment and about using this as an example. Now, what's interesting to me, this is coming from the people who tell us they believe in smaller, less intrusive government. You remember Reagan? Reagan was the master at bashing big government. You know, government programs, the problem. You know, it's never the solution. But yet, government grew massively under his watchful eye. It grew bigger, bigger, and more invasive, while simultaneously he's saying, no, no, we want smaller, less intrusive government. Quite a sleight of hand. And look, Republicans are doing the same thing today. Big government conservatives want to control your life. That's simple. They want to control your morality. They want to control what you do in the confines of your four walls, while making sure that the rich people don't pay taxes. And this is, as I said, remember when Republicans said that they weren't going to do this kind of stuff? Well, they are. And what's infuriating to me is I don't see I think there should be massive outrage. Now, I think this girl, when she gets out of jail, spending the next 90 days in jail, when she gets out, I think she's probably going to get a book deal. I think she's going to be the face of hopefully a movement that pushes back against this and says, look, you know, I was in this horrible situation. I hope there are talk shows out there. I will have her on this show if we can get her. Because I don't want that to be my daughter. I don't want that to be your daughter. But this is what big GOP government does to little girls. All while talking about, you know, we care about the children. And the weird thing to me is, and this is the thing that's so frustrating. Every day, we keep moving toward what is the movie Idiocracy. If you haven't seen Idiocracy, by all means do, especially the first 5 minutes. The first 5 minutes are brilliant. Because basically, the first 5 minutes tells you how we ended up in the situation we're in. All the smart people were saying, no, now's not the right time to have kids. You know, stock market, you know, things are going wrong. There's war going on. We should hold off. While the dumb people are reproducing like rabbits. And, you know, I love hearing my conservative friends say, oh, they're you're pushing for white replacement theory. No, no, it has nothing to do with color. We are pushing smart people out. The dim are reproducing at dangerously high rates, which is how we end up with Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and how we end up with Lauren Boebert and the rest of the cavalcade of crazy. But my goodness, every day we keep moving towards what is Idiocracy. And we never hold these people accountable because, again, we have our confirmation bias. We got our Facebook page. We're all Facebook warriors in our little bubble. The question is what happens? What happens down the road when we get what we fear? And we fear on both sides. Look, I fear big conservative government. I fear fascistic Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, big GOP government. The kind that's going to come into your bedroom with the morality police, the kind that's going to follow your daughter's menstrual cycle, the kind that's going to drown immigrant children in rivers. I fear that big government. Now, I've got conservatives who fear, you know, big taxation, you know, tax and spend liberals. What happens when all that goes away? You know, as was explained to me years ago, you want to have loud debate. You want the right and the left to go at each other. You want, you know, the red hats and the blue hats to have equal say and equal voice at equal volume so they can hash out and fight over and come to the best policy. We're no longer there. The right has the megaphone. They've got the main power. They've got so much power. their messaging machine is so much more powerful. Because all of the social media platforms are feeding what the right wants, because they're paying for it. Look, corporate America doesn't care about democracy. They don't care about good governance. They care about profits. They care about lining their pockets. So the people who are paying them the most, they're the ones whose message is getting out. And the weird thing is perfect example. My favorite quote today was from Ron DeSantis. DeSantis said at a campaign event, if we don't get our act together 25 years from now, school children in this country are going to be forced to learn 37 different pronouns in Mandarin, and we cannot let that happen. I looked it up. I think there are only 6 different pronouns in Mandarin. But, you know, never mind. Facts and accuracy do not play into this frame. But he's the biggest of the big government guys. Again, this is the guy who wants a we're going to take on the woke and we're going to jam things down people's throats. Look at what they're doing at the rewrite that they're doing to history as we speak. Slavery was a good thing. Taught slaves some skills. It's a good thing. They benefited from it. See how wonderful, see how benevolent slave owners were? They were so good. I'm waiting for them to go, you know, Hitler was a martyr and a war hero. You know, he wasn't all bad. I'm waiting for that. Now, the weird thing is this isn't new. This is what authoritarians do. They write their most favorable history. We're rewriting history to make us feel good. And anything that would be of a factual basis, we should do away with. Now, look, I'm someone who says, look, I think we should learn Florida's version of history. And then we should learn the actual history. And then we can compare the two. And you can find out where Florida is, well, pushing propaganda. This idea that, slaves did okay. You know, it was good for them. This is ridiculous. Now, understand, this just isn't Florida. See, this is the thing. I'm not giving Ron DeSantis the kind of credit that some would give him. In fact, I don't give him any credit for it other than he knows which conservative groups to steal from. All of this stuff, everything is coordinated. All of it is focus group tested, think tank approved. Moneyed interests have set up organizations all across this country for decades to dream up bad ideas, to rewrite history. In fact, a lot of the rewritten history comes from Hillsdale College. Now, Hillsdale College is the heart and soul of crazy conservatism right now. They've got a history, a constitutional curriculum that they're flaming around that a lot of constitutional scholars I know are going, that's kind of frightening. But here again, what they're doing is they're giving this stuff away and they're making sure that people see it. They're making sure that it's in people's pockets, that they can grasp it and understand what the conservative movement has done masterfully. The billionaires who fund them, they don't care about the money. You know, there was the story about Richard Mellon Scaife, and he used to fund the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. And he would spend like $20 million of his own money a year to keep that afloat because he knew it was a right-wing rag that you had to basically just give away because no one would buy it. But he wanted that in people's, in their view, in their eyeballs, in their ears. It wasn't about making a profit in this world. It was about changing hearts and minds. And this is what the right does masterfully. They take care of their own. You know, the old saying, how do you herd cats? A can of tuna. Well, the right understands this. They fund heavily right-wing media, and they do the work for them. You know, I tell the story all the time that I've gone to a number of right-wing radio rows over the years. I've been doing this 18 years. I've been in some interesting places over those 18 years. We went to CPAC, for instance. You know, this was more than 10 years ago, but we went to CPAC, and you go to these places. They understand how to run a radio row. They understand the importance of it. You know, I remember the first time I went to a right wing event, and you know, they had someone come up to me and go, "Well, how long are you going to record? How long are you going to be here? How many people do you want?" And for the hours I said I was going to be there, there was somebody in that chair every 15 minutes for the entire time. And not only did they put someone's behind in there in that seat, they came with a bio. They came with all of their accomplishments. They came with 10 questions they like to ask, that they like to be asked. They basically did your work for you. So when you sat down, you didn't need to know anything about this person. You just read the thing and go, "So, question number one." And you sounded like a genius. Oh, wow, you had a great back and forth. You never met the guy in your life. They understand the political theater that this can be. So when I see, you know, someone like DeSantis, who's taking advantage of that, again, focus group tested, think tank approved, and rewriting Florida's history, he's not doing it. The people the billionaire class pay to come up with these bad ideas, they're the ones doing it. And we seem to be taking it. And we seem to be, if you listen to the mainstream corporate-controlled media, we seem to be divided on it. Now, I take great solace in knowing that, and I thank, you know, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, for pointing this out when we sat down with her in Chicago. You know, the Maniac Moms for Misery, the Moms for Liberty group, they've got like 200,000 members. And those were mostly people who came out of the anti-mask movement. They're the Q people who think there are child molesters around every corner. So you've got these were a ready-made group of insaniacs. On the other side, you've got actual parents who care about their kids in the millions joining groups to save public education. And we had better do it forthright. Because what the right is doing incredibly efficiently is they're going through state houses across this country and passing voucher bills and charter bills and you name it, you know, in the name of school choice, targeting public education. Because they know that if they can take public education, they can kill this experiment. That they can turn this into the good, God-fearing, Christian, white, national kind of country that they believe it should be. And then they can rewrite history however they want. And that should be concerning, because that's when you start making the same mistakes over and over and over again. At least that's my thought. I want to hear yours. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1878. That was the day that a new song was introduced to the U.S. labor movement. Reverend Jesse H. Jones set the lyrics of a poem that had been written by I.G. Blanchard more than a decade earlier. The song was called The 8-Hour Day. The fight for 8 hours had become one of the central causes of labor. In 1850, the average work week was 70 hours. This meant that workers had little time for anything else beside their daily toil. After the Civil War, calls for the 8-hour day gained momentum. It became a movement that united workers from different workplaces and backgrounds. 8-hour leagues were formed in cities across the nation. They hosted talks and rallies to spread the word about the need to shorten the work week. At rallies, protesters waved 8-hour banners. They also sang the song that became their anthem. The first verse boldly began, "We mean to make things over. We are tired of toil for naught, with but bare enough to live upon, and never an hour for thought. We want to feel the sunshine. We want to smell the flowers. We are sure that God has willed it, and we mean to have 8 hours. We're summoning our forces from the shipyard, shop, and mill. 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. The 8-Hour Day song continues to be reimagined today, including this version by Rhythm Fest. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm telling you, it's coming. Christian Sharia law is just around the corner. We're gonna turn you into good moral folk, whether you want to or not. And if you're not, jail time coming. It's frightening. It's frightening what these people want. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. Aren't you happy?
Yes, I feel that every day. What's on your mind?
What I want, well, a couple of things. Number one, about AI, I guess I'm too old and I have seen too many movies of when the robots take over.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always been a bit concerned. First thing in my mind goes, oh, yeah. First it's that, and then we're all getting killed by the robots. Mm-hmm. But the Christian Sharia law, let's go there for just a minute. You know, they tried this before in England under Cromwell. And, you know, all the little Puritans were real kind of happy. And then all of a sudden, though, because Cromwell was a bit more of a fanatic than they were, people weren't real happy when they found out, like, you know, you couldn't celebrate Christmas, and disagreeing with Cromwell would get your head chopped off.
Yeah. People weren't happy when it meant them.
Exactly. And, you know, and the thing is, and I have said this to the local evangelical, so which Christian sect is going to be the one in power? She was like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you know, you got 1,000 or more Christian sects here. Which one's going to be in power? Are we going to have a big war between all of them while they decide who's the boss and what happens when you have a power change? So, you know, this has been going on, and I think I've brought this up before when I've called. You know, this has been going on since the early 70s. And each year they seem to step it up and people get a bit crazier. So your listeners out there that are all for the Christian Sharia law, they might want to sit down and think about, now, is it my version of Christianity that's going to be the one? Or are we going to have to fight all those Protestants and the Baptists and the Calvinists or what have you?
Yep.
So, I don't know, Rick. They're all insane. And that's all I can say. Have a good evening.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I've said for a very long time, the fun and entertainment will be when we finally decide that we are a Christian nation, when we finally put that flag in the ground, then to watch all of the different groups fight each other for supremacy. And profit, of course. I mean, my problem with Religion Incorporated is, you know, how bad they are with money. They always seem to need more. All, you know, George Carlin does a great bit. You know, God is all powerful, omnipotent, but just bad with money. you can create the humanity, can raise the sun and the rivers and all do all this stuff, but just bad with money. You know, he's all powerful, can do everything, but just needs a little bit more money. It's a great bit, but sadly true. And, you know, look, I grew up at a time when, you know, the Catholic Church was talking about peace and social justice. But I also remember on Mondays when the phone would ring and the church would be calling going, hey, how come there was no money in the envelope? Poor people, you got to put money in the envelope because had to go to church, you know, every Sunday. And you had to put the envelope in so that they knew you showed up. We didn't have any money. That was there sometimes, but not often. And that phone call came every week. And you go, that just sent, I got to tell you, a sour taste in my mouth. But I know you've got a tithe. And that's great if you have it. And you do what you got to do. But for poor people, I don't know. I'm struggling with that one still. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see where this goes as the different religious groups, which one wins. And I fear it will always be the cruelest of the cruel, because I'm not seeing, and maybe it's just I'm not looking in the right places, but I'm not seeing the religious leaders out there talking about how we're treating people on the border. I'm not seeing enough of, you know, how we treat children in this country. You know, there are movies out right now. There's the Sound of Freedom, and all my conservative friends are going, you got to see it. It's the greatest movie ever. And I'm going, I'm probably not going to. If someone wants to send me a free ticket, I'll go see it, but I'm not paying for it. It's a horrible premise. You know, is there child trafficking going on? Somewhere, I'm sure there is. And it's a scourge, and it should be dealt with. But this idea that, you know, this Christian warrior is going to take on the whole establishment and the U.S. government's bad. And it's selling a narrative that they want their people to buy into. And it's kind of a scary thing. Now you go, but you know, they're righting a wrong, and we should right those wrongs. This is what we do at the ballot box. But that's not how this is playing out. Now, also, you got a couple other movies coming out as well. Oppenheimer's coming out, and I wouldn't mind seeing that. And Barbie. You know, Barbie's coming out. There's a Barbie movie. And all I heard was about the Barbie movie, which is hysterical. Again, we've turned movies, especially Barbie movie, into Red Hat, Blue Hat. There should be a Pink Hat, because all I saw for the trailer was pink. But evidently, Barbie is all going to be about toxic femininity. And I'm not even really quite sure what that means just yet, but I'm sure after Barbie and the indoctrination that's going to come with, you know, little girls wearing pink, I'm sure I will find out. Can you believe we're where we are? And I go back to that. You got to see the movie Idiocracy. Just those first 5 minutes. That's how we got here. It's not about white or black. It's about the smart people didn't have enough kids. And I blame them. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back after this. Stick around.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I think my favorite quote of the day comes from Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, who says, if I were Prigozhin, I'd be very worried. He said, NATO has an open door policy. Russia has an open window policy. I think that's a good quote right there. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, what's going on around the world, and maybe something about the open window policy. I've asked our good friend Rich Ojeda to come talk with us. Rich is the host of Ojeda Live, heard and seen nightly on YouTube and Facebook. He's also the head chief cook and bottle washer over at the Turn Left Pack, turnleftpack.org, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
So what do you make of that? NATO's got an open doors policy. Russia's got an open window policy.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, anybody who has ever crossed Vladimir Putin has basically fell up a flight of stairs, out windows, accidentally, I don't know, ingested poison, and I'm going to tell you that this is a black eye on Vladimir Putin, because basically Prigozhin did what he did. And from the last word that I heard, the mercenaries from Wagner Group are no longer fighting in Russia. Now, Russia has lost over 200. They just hit that today. 240,000 Russian troops have been killed. And now we know that Wagner has lost over 20,000 and also 40,000 wounded in action. But I'm telling you, Vladimir Putin is not the one to cross. So Prigozhin had better sleep with his eyes open.
Wow. 240,000 people?
We haven't seen that since World War II.
Wow. I mean, that's wow, mind blowing. Now talking about dictators and threats and all of that. Did you see the Trump video and the Trump comment?
Yes.
I mean, first he's saying, you know, if you F with us, if you do something bad to us, we're going to do bad things to you that have never been done before. Now, obviously, this was a speech that was used in a different context that's been remarketed. But he also went on another talk show and said that, you know, hey, you know, we've got very passionate supporters that could be very dangerous if Jack Smith, you know, moves and puts him in jail. Those very passionate people could cause some, you know, some dangerous stuff. So, Jack, you know, watch your back.
No, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Donald Trump is desperate and he's hoping to scare Jack Smith and anyone else, you know, out of prosecuting him. And at the end of the day, I think that there's a lot of people out there that may be huge Trump supporters, but they're also looking at all those people who stormed the Capitol for Donald Trump and how many of them are now rotting in jail. And they're basically their lives are pretty much over. So, you know, I think that, you know, Donald Trump is in a world of hurt. I don't think Jack Smith is scared of him. I think Jack Smith is 15 steps ahead of him.
Yeah.
You know, now we know that because Eileen Cannon is a Federalist Society supportive Trump judge. Remember, he also knows he's getting ready to hit Donald Trump with another 45 charges over the classified documents. But, oh, by the way, Donald Trump broke the law with the classified documents in Washington, D.C. He also broke the law in New Jersey. So that's what he's going to do. He's going to go after Donald Trump in a New Jersey court. He's going to go after Donald Trump in a D.C. court. And I can guarantee you that Donald Trump is not that lucky to continue getting judges that are going to do whatever he wants. Because at the end of the day, everybody has to look in the mirror and say, do I want my reputation to be thrown in the trash over this guy? And anybody who's got anything between their ears knows that he doesn't care for nobody but himself. He will sabotage your career as long as he gets to get away with what he did.
Yeah, if you've noticed, there are a bunch of people who've been associated with him who are either, you know, been found guilty or indicted. Or I mean, there's the people in his sphere. There's a bunch of people with a lot of legal bills because of him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like he's having a hard time finding lawyers. Well, number one, he doesn't pay lawyers. Number two, the lawyers pretty much know that if they follow through with what Donald Trump wants his lawyers to do, they end up losing their license. I mean, Rudy Giuliani, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to be chasing ambulances in Montana pretty soon, you know, because that's going to be the only place he can practice law.
Oh, now I look at what's going on in Georgia, and you've got this Fannie Willis who's, you know, actually going, you know, there's and I don't know if this is accurate, but the rumor now is, the leak now is that Trump and a bunch of other people are going to be facing racketeering charges.
RICO!
Which is, you know, mob kind of stuff.
Yes, and the thing is these RICO charges, they have to be, it's like they have to be two crimes committed simultaneously for RICO. And with Donald Trump, it's more than that. It's like three and four. So, I mean, he is facing a world of hurt. And, you know, at the end of the day, too, we know what he's trying to do. We know that Eileen Cannon has now pushed it over to, you know, until May of next year. And, of course, if he wins the primary, which he probably will, there she's going to push it off to after the election, which is what we know she was going to do. But I'll tell you what, Jamie Raskin was absolutely spot on when he said, hey, if you're a person in the United States of America and you are facing, I don't know, murder charges or something like that, guess what? All you have to do is go file to run for president. And if they let Donald Trump go that way, then they got to let you go that way, too.
Yeah, no. But here's the thing. And this is where, you know, I know there's a lot of conspiracy around, you know, oh, he's gonna push the trial off and Eileen Cannon's going to do all this. You know, I've talked to former federal prosecutors and they've said, look, you know, you can push this stuff off for years and it's no conspiracy. If his lawyers want this to happen early, it'll happen early. If they fear that he's going to lose, they're going to push this off for years down the road. This isn't something that's going to happen quickly.
Well, I mean, you know, but once again, it's not supposed to be that way. If they set a court date, they need to, you know, justice is supposed to be swift.
Yeah.
You know, even in the military, the Uniform Code of Military Justice says that you are entitled to a speedy trial.
And the
and
first
that's
thing
exactly
you do,
what this is.
the first thing you do, Rich, when they arrest you and they charge you and they go to, is they you sign a waiver for that. Because I've talked to lawyers who've said, yeah, one of the first things you do is you sign a waiver for that speedy trial thing. Because trials, I don't know if you know much about our legal system. The wheels of justice grind very, very slowly.
Hello. Well, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, Donald Trump deserves to be held accountable.
Yes.
I would like to see him be held accountable in his lifetime. You know, I mean, he is 3 years and only 3 years younger than Joe Biden. Joe Biden can, you know, run a 5K, ride a bicycle, and Donald Trump has to be hosed down twice a day because he's basically soiled his Depends. So, and he can barely walk down a ramp. So, you know, I just want to make sure that Donald Trump gets held accountable before he is no longer.
Yeah, that's a job I don't want. Now, you've got the potential of a third party candidate. And the reason I bring this up, your former state of West Virginia, their favorite son, Joe Manchin, his name's being thrown around as the potential, part of the bipartisan ticket with Manchin and John Huntsman. What are you thinking of that?
Okay, first and foremost, Joe Manchin is only doing this because Joe Manchin wanted Joe Biden to appoint him as the Secretary of Energy. Joe Manchin is a coal guy, and he wants to be connected to the oil side because Joe Manchin wants to make sure when he's done with politics, he's got money coming in all directions. But he's mad, so because he's mad and he didn't get his way, he's going to try to do something to sabotage Joe Biden. He's going to try to get himself on the ballot in states that Joe Biden barely won in the hopes that Donald Trump can pull it out. Now, here you go. If you look at West Virginia, which Joe Manchin has been in charge of for the past four decades, we are 49th and 50th in everything. So if you want to elect a person for president who has been 49th and 50th in everything, I mean, goodness gracious, all you have to do is walk into West Virginia and flush the toilet and you make it better, you know, and Joe Manchin hasn't. So, you know, these people should be smart enough to know that if you vote for Joe Manchin, you're wasting your vote. At the end of the day, there's more Democrats than there are Republicans, and Republicans are waking up. And I do believe that Republicans are waking up. So, you know, I think that, you know, I mean, the recent poll, Biden was 47, Trump was 40. And once again, Trump is continuing to drop because why? I mean, the guy can't even daggone talk right now. They can talk all they want about Joe Biden. But goodness gracious, have you listened to Donald Trump talk? Have you read any of his truths? It looks like somebody daggone, you know, threw up alphabet soup.
Or the other end.
Yeah.
Or the other end. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rich Ojeda. He is the host of Ojeda Live. You can hear that every weeknight on Facebook Live and on YouTube. Also, he's the head chief cook and bottle washer over at the Turn Left Pack. Check out their website, turnleftpack.org. Now, I got to get your thoughts on Mark Meadows because, you know, George Conway has speculated that Meadows is, what's the word, strangely quiet or strange quietness on the January 6th election investigation. Is it possible he's the smoking gun? He's the
absolutely
the whistleblower?
Absolutely. He held out until he knew he could get what he wanted, and that's exactly what he did. Let me tell you something. Donald Trump should be shaking in his boots because we already have people that we know that we're in the Willard Hotel, that we're in the Oval Office during the riots. But, you know, let me tell you something. The chief of staff is literally everything that Donald Trump says and everything that he does goes through the chief of staff. There is like it's called a leadership marriage. In the military, it's your company commander, your first sergeant, and your executive officer. At the battalion level, it's command sergeant major, colonel, and the battalion XO. But in the civilian world, in the presidency, it's the presidency, the vice president, and the chief of staff. And everything that goes on, those three people know everything. They're a part of the conversations. They don't make a decision without bouncing it off each other. So Mark Meadows knows everything, and he's going to absolutely save his hide because he's going to tell on everybody. And in the end, they're going to hate him, but, you know, he's not going to go to prison.
He's not going to go to
prison. He's going to be the one that gives him vote. Yeah, we're all going to love him in the end because it's going to be his words that are going to send Donald Trump away.
Yeah, I'm not going to love him. You know, it's like I don't love Mike Pence.
I love to punch him in the face.
No. I can't go along with that on air.
No violence. Gotcha.
But the reality is he did the right thing, even if it was for, you know, all the wrong reasons, still doing the right thing. And that, at least that much credit is due.
Yeah. Lastly, but he only did it to save his butt.
Yeah. And but the sad reality is Pence had to go to the guy who can't spell potato for advice, which is just, okay. Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on Marjorie Three Names. Evidently, Hunter Biden's lawyer has filed an ethics complaint against her for the whole picture thing, the whole explicit picture thing, the pornography that she displayed during a hearing. I personally would like to see her arrested and charged with the Revenge Porn Act, that thing that they do. That would be fun. That would be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, they have to start, you know, realizing that Hunter Biden is a private citizen. He has already paid restitution for the two times that he was late on paying his taxes. He has pled guilty on a charge of basically acquiring a firearm while he was addicted to drugs. That's it. And that's all they got, you know, and, you know, they're fixated on him. And it's really just embarrassing them because they really have nothing. But yes, Marge the Trainwreck Green exposed naked pictures of Hunter Biden. And you know what? She shouldn't have spent all that money on that tube of toothpick or tube of chapstick, because as far as I'm concerned, he needs to sue her for every penny she's got.
There you go. Rich, as always, good stuff. Appreciate the time, man.
Always, my brother.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I love these stories. This was over at Alternet, I found this. A guy named Marion Hudak, 51-year-old, Concord, North Carolina man, Trump supporter, as reported. Allegedly launched a campaign of racial intimidation against his neighbors. Very unhappy. Evidently, he has tried to run black motorists off the road. He's got that big blue X flag out in front of the house. Got in his pickup truck. He's made death threats. Your plethora of racial insults came out of his mouth. And you go, North Carolina. You know, some of the backwoods places. Yeah, I could see that. Yelling at people they should go back to Mexico. You know, all that stuff. What's interesting, and the punchline, according to the beast Justin Rohrlach, evidently this guy Hudak immigrated to the U.S. in 2001. I mean, he's only been in the country, what, 22 years? And now he's truly a redneck American. Forgot all that past, forgot all about how he got here, and now we're gonna dive right in. It's kind of, well, I don't know, crazy? Because most of us came here from somewhere else. I know, we did it the right way. No, my family, the part that came here, they just got on a boat and they showed up. And they walked through Ellis Island like everybody else because it was there. There's no Ellis Island on the southern border. There's no give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free down there. In fact, what Texas is doing is they're literally spending billions of dollars and have virtually done nothing. And understand, look, you know, all of the things that they have done, it's been about making lives worse. It's about making conditions worse. It's about punishment. It's about pain and suffering. It's about cruelty. And look, the cruelty is the point. As I say all the time, when I look at these conservatives, it's the cruelty that is the point. They truly, to their core, believe that harsh conditions are going to make you stronger. You know, that idea that if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. But if it kills you, oh well, better luck next time. And look, I struggle with that. Now I'm in this spot where, you know, I want my kids to, you know, to work hard, you know, to do all those things, to learn how to make a buck and you know, have some struggles and some wins so that it builds character. I'm with that. But this idea that we're gonna put nets in the river so that they can catch people in nets so that they you know, maybe they drown. Maybe they drown, maybe they don't. Maybe we throw them back. You know, it's like fishing, only for people. But the part of this that gets me is, you know, they've got the most aggressive border, anti-border, whatever you want to call it, and it's done virtually nothing. Well, unless you consider the politics of it. And the politics of it is like all of this stuff. It's about the cruelty. You know, someone asked me about this Jason Aldean song. And I said, look, you know, the reality is that was written specifically to get this reaction. That was written specifically to make an anthem for the cruel crowd. You know, this idea that if you're different, that if you're going to come into my town and you're going to demand that you do what you want to do in my town, in my Christian Sharia law environment, in my moral, you know, in my moral boundaries, we'll show you. We'll drag you out back and string you up in a tree. We'll drag you out and we'll drown you in one of those nets. That's what they're really saying. That's the kind of stuff that sells on that side of the fence. And you know, here's my problem as someone who has been poor, as someone who has been one of the downtrodden, the kicked. I didn't like it. And I don't think others should be either. Now, it's easy to be jingoistic. It's easy to, hey, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. Hooray for me. Yay. Screw everybody else. But that gets us the kind of, well, the kind of politicians like a Greg Abbott, like a Ron DeSantis. Now, fortunately, and this is where I take hope. Fortunately, DeSantis is not rising in the polls. He's not gaining traction. And Abbott isn't either. That gives me hope that even maybe this is too far even for Republican voters, that this level of madness, this level of cruelty is a bridge too far for even them. I'm hoping, I have no empirical data. I have no, you know, focus group testing on this. I don't have the budget for it, but I got to think the fact that DeSantis is nowhere near going to be president. that maybe that they've had enough. Now, the love affair with Trump, that's a hero worship thing. That's a cult thing. And at this point, I can make no excuses for Trump supporters. I was able to in 2016. I really was. The argument being that people, they believed the con that he was selling. They believed he was going to do all the things that Joe Biden has done. He was going to bring back manufacturing. He was going to, he was going to do all of this stuff. He was going to make the economy strong. We're going to make it great again. And he didn't. He ushered in almost a depression. And you go, but there was a pandemic. Yeah. There have been things that have gone on in other administrations. He's responsible. The buck stops there. You don't get to pick and choose where the buck stops. But I'm hopeful, and this is why I keep getting up every day and doing this and hoping that maybe sanity comes back. That maybe we can, because I've said this before, I used to have conservatives that I would have good spirited discussions with. They're all gone. They've all gone recessed into their silos. Because now it's, thanks to social media, everyone's in their bubble. And we don't debate anymore. So I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, if you've got any thoughts. And look, if you think I'm wrong on this, because if you think, morality is important, and we're going to bring back good, God-fearing Christian Sharia law, and it's going to be good for the country, I want to hear the argument. I want to hear why that's good for us. rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as I said earlier, the AI thing is kind of a big deal. I hope that the agreement that the Biden administration came out will help. But as was pointed out to me when I said, hey, they're going to put a watermark on all of the AI generated content so that you can easily find out what it is. I was told that when you Google, one of the top Google searches is how to get the watermark off. Yeah. So I, like I said, I don't have great hope for it. It's a baby step in the right direction, but just a baby step, something Congress certainly going to have to deal with. And here to share some thoughts on maybe how we get ahead of this, or if it's already too late, I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you think of this this AI deal that the president announced today with Amazon, Anthropic, Google, Inflection, Meta, Microsoft, and OpenAI? We've got some voluntary guidelines and some safeguards that have been negotiated. Any thoughts?
Can you say I'll be back? I'm illiterate in technology, okay? But there is a area I can click and it has a watermark remover, an AI watermark remover online, free. A watermark remover for images. You're right, you just Google it. I think the president doing something or the Congress doing something, is better than nothing. But, this horse is, galloping down the path. And what's going to happen is there's going to be one great big AI hoax of some type that's just going to send, reverberations. But, Rick, I'm at a loss of how now, we get a handle on it. And let me say this, too. Besides the private sector, our government for years has been obsessed with AI. Obsessed. And when I say government, I'm talking about the shadowy part of it.
Yeah, you know? The military part of it.
Sure. Because you know where that's going. Oh, AI robots.
Yep.
So we send our robots out. They send their robots out. And then let's see who loses more robots.
You know? I'm actually okay with that on a certain level.
Yeah, it's not humans.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my kids. You know, if we're sending out robots, yeah. Now, my problem is I know that, you know, I've read some of the books. I lived through the 80s and all of the, you know, the sci-fi stuff that came out. What happens when the robots get tired of, you know, getting slaughtered on the battlefield and turn on us?
Yeah. Well, this is the biggest worry, and I've been saying this forever to a lot of friends. The biggest worry I have is the focus of AI to create the artificial intelligence, and the goal is to think for itself because. And I'm going to be totally serious when I say this. That's where you get to the point of the Terminator where some form of AI has a, like, sort of thinking capacity that says we're a problem and we have to be brought under control, and they hack into systems and then they threaten us.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, Bob.
It's possible.
Here's the thing. They would probably be right. We are the problem.
Well, that's true.
I mean, you know, I guess
one way to deal with climate change. Yeah.
Yeah. I, that's one of those things that, you know, I just, where do you go now from me as a working person? The first thing that I come to is radical self-interest. This is going to cost millions of people their jobs and their livelihoods. And this is going to disrupt millions of families and going to cause, you know, mass migrations. And I mean, this could be, you know, the greatest disruption in the economy in the history of,
yes,
of civilization. And it could be, and look, there are people who are saying this is going to create a lot of millionaires, and it probably will. The people who get on the other side of it and have the technology, they're going to do fine. Everybody else is screwed.
Well, yeah, because here's the problem. Back, I think it was around 2003, the president of Ohio State at that time came out to D.C., and they have, you know, the Ohio State Day if you've got a connection to Ohio State, right? And she stood there and she bragged, and I made a public comment to her. She bragged over and over about how hard it was to pass this certain test for the criteria to get into, you know, this. Mathematics test, you know, how they were really bringing the standards up. And I told her, you obviously just said I couldn't have gotten a degree from Ohio State. It's true. Not with that kind of, you know, math requirement. And it's almost like an elitist thinking. That's what I felt. But on top of it, now people with this whole electronic movement and AI, et cetera, then everybody is expected to do what? Go to college, you get a huge student loan, and everybody's going to become a technological engineer, you know?
No, because this is the argument that I get from people. And I go, you know, AI is going to be massively disruptive. You know, when Tucker Carlson comes out and says that he would not allow automation in trucking because it is the number one job for high school educated white men, mm-hmm. you know, he's not wrong. What do you do with all those people? Because you're right. You know, a 55, 56-year-old white guy who's, you know, he's been driving a truck for 30 years. I look at myself. You're not going to retrain me to do coding or software. You're not right. going to give me a second career in technology because I'm not going to be able to compete with 18 or 20-year-olds. It's
right.
never going to happen.
Right.
And this is going to be wildly disruptive.
My son-in-law drives a truck. Well, not a truck, but a UPS truck. And which is a small truck, okay? But he's a driver, and he's been able to, you know, raise his family on this. He has a high school degree. Great guy. Wouldn't, like me, be in the interaction mode to become, you know, some kind of electronic guy. It's not in me, and it's not in him. And then what happens if they... you know, automate all these trucks. That's just one aspect, and you can take it. I mean, they're even doing it in fast food.
No, and this is where understanding, you know, where that you have to have an economy that has jobs for every skill level, and those jobs, mm-hmm. and this is not new. This is decades old and of conversation. You have to have jobs for every skill level, and that job has to pay at least enough to eke out an existence, to lead a reasonable life, to put a roof over your head, food on the table, save a little bit for retirement, maybe, but there's got to be a way for people to make a pathway forward, or what you're going to end up with is the kind of desperation and hopelessness that leads people to more and more criming and violence and all of that stuff, which is why, I've said, in a lot of high poverty areas, it's why you have such high crime rates, because people are desperate.
Right. Yeah. I don't know where this all goes. I don't know how, you get a handle on it. I don't know where, but it's going to be a huge societal problem. If this goes the full automation AI route, it is going to be chaos.
Is there any chance of Congress getting their heads together and doing anything? I mean, if you were in Congress, how would you tackle this monster?
Well, I think, that's a tough question. If I was there, well, first of all, I'd probably be part of a bipartisan caucus that tries to, get the leading experts that you can find from all the walks of life, from technology, from labor, from different fields and aspects, and try to get them together to see which direction we could go, in some lawmaking. I mean, I think that'd be the first step, at least, to do.
And I know one of the first things that I would do is I'd tax the hell out of it. I've said from the beginning, and I said this probably 10 years ago, mainly because of automation and trucking. I'm of the mindset that if you are moving towards a technological replacement of workers, that should cost you that worker's wages and taxes. So that, you could move to it, but it's still going to cost you on the short term. And we red circle that those people so that they're able to make it through to retirement, and the jobs that we lose will be through, through people, who have started in that, being able to finish out and go through, making decent lives. But I think you have to make this a lot more expensive and redistribute the wealth from the productive gains in a much better way than we've ever done with this kind of technological change. Now, that's gotten no traction, but I think that's a start.
Right. Right.
Do you agree, is that a fool's errand?
No. I think everything we can throw out there, to make this palatable, at least, like you say, if people are being replaced, for them to be able to, at a certain age, to continue on, and also look towards the future, of what we can do. Because I know the first thing that people will start to say is, we'll retrain everybody to be, as you said, coders, or we'll retrain everybody to be engineers, and that's not going to work.
No, most certainly not. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. I got to get your thoughts on the trial date. I got to move over to Trump for a minute. Evidently, May of 24 is when the trial date for Trump has been put down. I have no belief that the trial will happen before the election, but I'm curious. You usually have a thumb on this kind of stuff. Any thoughts?
Oh, I don't think it'll happen before the election. I really don't, because it's the legal system. And if it starts in May, and also I think we have to really look at this aspect of it. When that trial begins, there are going to be constant motions, almost item for item. This classified document, for example, is brought up. And the next thing you know, there's a motion on it of presidential privilege or this or that. And there's just going to be so many. They could do 100 motions.
Yeah.
Now, their motions before the trial begins, that's all for the appeals process. That's why they make those motions, of course. But I'm talking about during the trial. This trial could go on for a long, long time. And then, of course, there's the aspect of the other indictment that's coming and trial, which I would think is not going to be concluded before the election.
Yeah, I don't know if any of the trials will be done before the election.
And a potential for Georgia.
Yeah. Well, look, there's talk of racketeering charges, RICO, which, we're trying the president as a mob boss.
And of course, then there's the money aspect, because I think on one hand, I read there was $17 million that's been paid out, $15 million. And believe me, I can tell you, because I paid out, I think it was $581,000, and that was out of supporters who helped my legal defense fund, but also out of the campaign account itself. And that was, you know, just for my situation. So Trump is going to have to, one way or another, unless he uses his personal money, which I doubt, he's going to have to start to, he is starting to bleed these campaign accounts. Ken Cuccinelli with the DeSantis campaign that used to be a Trump guy, he was pointing that out, saying, hey, you know, if you're contributing, basically, if you're contributing to Trump, he's using it for, you know, his defense, which, frankly, I don't think his base cares about that, to be honest with you.
No, but here's the thing. This is going to make, if you're a Republican running in the primaries next May, if you're running, you know, over the summer, this has got to be something that dogs you as a candidate. Now, I don't think it'll mean much to Trump, but I think for any Republican candidate, this is going to be, or do you not see it that way?
Oh, no. I did radio this morning in Tennessee, and that was my very topic. You know, somebody who's run in elections for 24 years, right? I did. And in congressional elections, you know, for over a 10-year period of time. If I was in Congress right now, Rick, and I'm out there and I want to talk about, you know, balancing the nation's budget and education and, you know, working rights and on and on and on, and what's going to happen everywhere is, what do you think about Marjorie Taylor Greene today? Or what do you think about Congresswoman Jayapal? Or what did you think about Santos? What about Trump and the trial? Will you vote against Trump? I mean, it's just going to be endless. It's going to drown out the message. I just was thinking about this today before I was talking on the station down south, and I was thinking, as a candidate, I would be probably about ready to lose my mind, because this is going to be a really rough summer with all of this going on to get your message out. It's going to get drowned out. And, now, and you're right, he doesn't care.
No, he doesn't
care.
The
candidates are going to have a problem.
Now, unless you're a candidate who doesn't have a message, because I look at the Republican Party right now, and they seem void of any real policy aims, and specifically any that are going to actually help people.
Well, they've got one big promise that right now is potentially going down the tubes. They promised 12 bills, which is a great idea. I'm 1,000% behind it. Do it the old way. 12 appropriation bills. They promised them. Good luck on that one right now. This is this is July.
Yeah, but they said it's going to be World War III to get that through, and you know, we could be looking at another government shutdown. Which my position on it was, they're probably going to want to do so that they can hurry up and cause that recession. Because I think the only way Republicans are going to do well next year is if we end up somehow in a recession.
But the one thing that the leaders don't want is to be the ones responsible for the shutdown, because, you know, 39% will blame them, 39% will blame, you know, Biden and the Democratic Party. So the leaders don't want that, but then there's the circular firing squad. I mean, did you ever think you'd see the day Marjorie Taylor Greene is booted out of the Freedom Caucus because she says hi to the speaker? I'm sorry, he's a Republican speaker. The Freedom Caucus are Republicans. I forgot.
Yeah.
Wow, what a sin.
It is crazy, crazy times. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on Joe Manchin. His name keeps being thrown out as one of the fusion candidates, him and John Huntsman as the VP. Any thoughts on a Manchin-Huntsman ticket?
You know, I know Manchin's out there teasing it. I have to think that he is going to rerun. I've got to think he's going to rerun in his home state as senator.
Now, part of me goes, yeah, I agree. And then there's part of me goes, this would be an interesting out so that he doesn't lose, because I think he loses the Jim Justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still in the Manchin. I'm stuck in the, you know, Joe will pull it out one more time mind frame, okay?
Okay.
You know, because as you know, I lived on the border of West Virginia and Ohio, and it's Joe Manchin, and he's always defied the odds, and he could probably do it one more time, et cetera. But I will say what is tempting, and your theory has some validity, the new poll, you know, in his mind, he's got 16% of registered voters that would consider supporting a fusion third-party ticket. And then, of course, you know where your mind goes, well, I've got 16%. I only need 33% in one vote, you know. And, you know, another trial for Trump and another stumble for the president, and there I am. I mean, he could be tempted into doing this, and it would be, you're right, it would be a way out. And let's face it, it would lead to probably afterwards a good-paying job.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, no. I mean, I look at 2024 is going to be an interesting bit of time, especially on the Democratic side, because you're going to have potentially Joe Manchin, the thorn in the side of the Democratic Party. You've got a kook in RFK Jr. on the Democratic side, another thorn. You know, it could be interesting on the Democratic side. Now, on the RFK Jr. front, the good thing is now I can tell him to shut the blank up, because now I know he's not really an anti-vaxxer. I had always thought he was an anti-vaxxer. All of the things that have been attributed to him, all of the things that helped build his whatever that children's network is, has been all about the vaccine. I now find out he's totally vaxxed up. All of his kids have all their vaccines except for the COVID, obviously. But, you know, not the anti-vaxxer everyone thought he was.
Well, yeah, what's good for what they say is not good for what they do.
Yeah.
But you know what does surprise me, Rick? I can't tell you how many people, I call them regular earthlings. They're not, you know, politically inspired like all of us. But I can't tell you how many people have said to me, well, you know, he's a Kennedy and he's going to really, you know, doesn't he have traction within the Democratic Party? And I said, no, he's not a Kennedy in the sense of a Kennedy where, you know, majority of Democrats really hang on to, you know, everything that he is about and everything he says. However, in this election potentially coming up, everybody makes a difference. If Joe Manchin runs, you know, and if Kennedy runs, I mean, it's just all a little percentage here and a little percentage there.
That's all you're going to need,
because
it could be very close. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that Kennedy name, I'm sorry, doesn't carry a lot of weight with me. JFK gave some great speeches and all that. But Teddy Kennedy was a disaster for working people with all of the deregulation and the push towards neoliberalism. Sorry. I know a lot of people loved him, but a disaster in my view.
Well, and RFK Jr. has just went into so many conspiracy theories, and now he's, you know, the Republicans, of course, they'll put him on TV anytime they can.
Oh, sure. It'll feed his ego. There you go. Yep. Bob, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Nay. I'm going to take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. From the top. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931, and Chicago public school teachers went home without a paycheck. The school system was broke. Property owners out of work due to the Great Depression could not pay their property taxes, which were used to fund the public schools. Schools in inner cities lacked libraries, playgrounds, and often even adequate toilet facilities. Classrooms were overcrowded. Black teachers faced racial discrimination. School administrators piled on more clerical work onto teachers' already busy workloads. They introduced a blizzard of standardized tests. Still, according to an article published in 1927 in the American Teacher magazine, teachers were supposed to believe that teaching was a noble profession, free and immune from the cares of the more sordid world. The same article went on to say that many teachers, quote, believed their personal dignity and self-respect required that they keep aloof from any organization affiliated with labor. The Great Depression made teachers more militant. However, Chicago teachers stayed on the job despite the payless paydays. One Chicago teacher explained that they were determined not to desert the Chicago schools. It was not easy organizing Chicago's teachers. Only 10% of the teachers belonged to the four competing teachers' unions. But not getting paid helped arouse them. And 2 years later, 5,000 teachers converged on Chicago's largest banks in protest. They broke windows and overturned desks. Chicago's mayor, Ed Kelly, agreed to pay 4 of the 9 months back pay owed to them. Finally, in 1934, thanks to federal assistance, the Chicago teachers received all of their back pay. You only need read about the current Chicago teachers' struggle to see that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Got an email here real quick that I just looked at. Terry writes, I tuned in late. What would you do if you were the teacher who was fired for allowing her kids to sing the Rainbow Song by Dolly Parton? And I just saw this in Wisconsin. A teacher was fired and for basically protesting the school's ban on the Rainbow Land, and I'm going, but you know, I thought this was a big hillbilly to do. They thought this would be right in their line. No, it's because it's talking about inclusiveness and you know, being decent people, and I guess we can't have that in education. So I guess this teacher, Melissa Temple, was fired last week in Waukesha, Wisconsin, when the Board of Education decided to go after her. And this is where you go, one, I hope her union, I'm hoping she is a member of a union, either AFT or NEA, where you push this, where you file lawsuits, you go after this school district, and this becomes a national thing. Because if you're allowed to get away with it in Waukesha, Wisconsin, it's going to happen all across the country. So for me, the first thing is, the first line of defense clearly is, you know, hopefully she's a member of a labor union, and those and that union will use the resources that it has to go after this district. But this becomes a political issue then. Do we want people on the board who are going to fire people over a song that kids are singing? I mean, it's mind-blowing where we are. You know, never mind those kids may go hungry, never mind those kids may not eat anything, but heaven forbid they sing about a rainbow. Jeez, man, it's crazy where we are. Just crazy moment. That's why we've got to get active and engaged and vote. Appreciate you tuning in. You miss any of the program, grab the podcast. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.